Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is that All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Restore call of the day, brought to you by our good buddies at Phone Restore. You dropped your phone or your iPad and have that dreaded spider web across the screen. Is your computer not working quite right? Bring it to the guys at Phone Restore. Most repairs are done in less than one single hour, located at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue. Nice little local location for you here. Check out the website. The internet says go to phonerestore.com. Cole Kublick, guess what happened yesterday? Louisville got punked by the NCAA. And you know who's not happy about that? Rick Pitino.
Of course not.
The head coach of the Louisville basketball team, because he has been suspended for the first five ACC games of the season next year, which I feel like was Hugh Freeze should get this year. And he does not like it.
This is over the top. It's to the point where it's not even conceivable what I just read. It's not even conceivable, believable. So we have to just put all our trust and faith that this is that the appeals will do the right things in arguing our case, because we presented a very strong case. You know, for 35 some odd years, I've had a lot of faith in the NCAA and have reacted that way accordingly as a head basketball coach, in the belief in their rules. I feel not like everybody here, not only is it unjust, unfair, over the top severe, but I've lost a lot of faith in the NCAA.
Oh. So Rick Pitino, who is upset that his team got in trouble for having prostitutes on campus and for taking money from the athletic department and putting it into the pockets of escorts to satisfy the 16, 17, and 18-year-old young men, has lost faith in the NCAA for being mad about that. Forced to vacate, give up some scholarships, vacate the 2013 national championship, and obviously for him to be suspended for the first five games of the ACC season this coming year.
He also comes out yesterday, Arky, and says, hey, I'm here to win more championships. I'm going to be here for a long time. We're going to continue doing this. How surprised are you? Not how surprised. What do you make of some of these schools standing by their head coaches through very serious NCAA allegations? Are we entering a new dawn of schools basically throwing middle finger at the NCAA or challenging the NCAA as to you don't have enough to truly force change upon us? I mean, if this was 10 years ago, Hugh Freeze is gone. Rick Pitino is gone. There's no debate. There's no discussing. There's no lawyering up. There's no waiting to see what the final judgment is. They're just out. And now these schools are standing by these guys. I mean, this team's losing scholarships. They're going to vacate a championship. And it's just like, yeah, man, we're going to ride with them. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and that's what blows my mind about this, is that we come in there with this, you know, holier than thou. Hey, you know, we're better than you. We don't want to give 16-year-olds prostitutes when they come in to visit our campus. It's not really that holier than thou. It just seems kind of like it should make sense that way.
Yeah.
And when you get in trouble, the school should want to say, oh, man, this is a really bad look. You've already self-imposed some penalties before. Oh, this looks really bad. Oh, even more sanctions. Now, we got to distance ourselves from this coach. But in the case of like Louisville and Ole Miss, they're talking about maybe once-in-generation type coaches that they may never get again. They're getting success that if Rick Pitino leaves, if Hugh Freeze leaves, they may not see a good recruiter like that for a while. They may not see a good coach like that that can get them to a Sugar Bowl in a while. They may just end up going back into sort of the doldrums or at best middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And I think there's a...
Especially in the conference they're playing in.
Yeah. And I think there is a serious fear that if you don't... If you can find some way, if it's not over-the-top egregious, if it's not straight cash, straight sex, straight trading favors, straight trading everything, that if this was... If this was someone less accomplished or less up the ranks like that, if this was, let's say, I don't know. Let's just say pick Mike Leach. And Mike Leach, I would argue, is in trouble, got a lot more trouble for a lot less.
Yeah, kind of like Bruce Pearl?
Bruce Pearl, fine example as well. A guy who even the whole barbecue, got to show cause for barbecue. If you're in the middle of the pack coach now, I could see them getting rid of you. But if you're an all-timer at a school, I mean, that's when we talk about what would happen, what would it take for the NCAA to come to Alabama, for Alabama to say, we got to get rid of Saban. Because what we're talking about is, what's the worst of the worst, right?
Yeah.
Worst of the worst is paying guys and trying to get these kids.
Yeah, I would argue this is worse than paying kids.
Well, I'm just saying, like, we're in these two scenarios with Ole Miss and with Louisville, respectively. You got paying players, which is supposed to be like the worst of the worst, and then you got getting hookers for 17, 18, even 16-year-old prospects.
It's scary to think about.
And they're like,
that
we'll
was
stick
organized
with them.
Yeah, we're gonna let him continue to lead kids. Now, Pitino, of course, is arguing that he had no knowledge of this. That's his defense. Louisville will appeal these sanctions laid down by the NCAA. It could lose its 2013 title. Pitino will be suspended for the first five ACC games in 17 and 18 for failing to monitor his program during an alleged sex for pay scandal. The Division I Committee on Infractions announced this yesterday. So, by appealing, Louisville hopes to. What do you most hope to have withdrawn here? Patino suspension?
Oh,
the scholarships?
I think as much as possible, just whatever they can mitigate. Because here's what the NCAA is. We've often talked about the NCAA having issues with subpoena power, being able to get people to talk and get direct evidence. Just like Ole Miss is doing, they're going to say just prove it. And everything that you think you can't physically prove by documentation, by seeing something in writing somewhere, they're just going to be like, hey, that's just what this 16-year-old kid said. Maybe he had an agenda. Maybe the kid at the Mississippi State now had an agenda against Ole Miss. People just have agendas. How can you prove it? And that's, I think, where this new dawn that you're starting to allude to for the NCAA in schools, which is, hey, if you don't got it in writing and you ain't got paper trail, I don't see what you think you're going to be able to burn us with this and why you should be able to burn us.
The NCAA's decision after the 2013 national championship, after the committee issued yesterday, quote, a vacation of basketball records in which student athletes competed while ineligible from December 10 to July 14. It's a lot of games.
Four-year span that they are going to have at this point vacated victories, which is always one of those things. Which
so
is
stupid.
It's like, we know who won the games, but you're taking away banners out of the rafters, and you're taking away the trophy itself. I think they got to go back and get the trophy because the trophy for the basketball is an actual trophy that the NCAA gives you.
The NCAA said, I found this interesting, Arky. The NCAA said the school must provide a list of games impacted by the decision within 45 days. And if ineligible players participated, the school could have to remove its banner and erase the title from its record books. Why should the school have to do this?
Well, I think it's also with scheduling with the ACC and how they get that done. that the school needs to sort of figure out within the next 45 days what that schedule is going to look like.
Probation for 4 years, could be scholarship reductions, recruiting restrictions, $5,000 fine, forfeiture of any money received during a conference revenue sharing from 12 to 15
now
in NCAA big. Tournaments.
Now that's big.
Yeah.
Because you got to hit them where it hurts. And where it hurts programs at this point is money. Because vacating, you know, a bunch of wins out of the record book doesn't mean anything for anybody. Forfeiting the national championship probably hurts when you're talking about down the road looking back and saying, oh, hey, crap, didn't we win the championship in 2013?
Right.
No, you actually didn't. You cheated. And you had illegal things happening on your campus. But the taking of money, that's where it hurts people. That's when you start taking money away, because that's where the way all this works, right? It moves all these programs.
Yeah.
You take money away.
I mean, there's your facilities, there's your, you know, uniforms, your nice locker rooms, your academic centers, your dining halls. You know, it's
like, I think that's like 5 years worth of NCAA tournaments or 4 years worth of NCAA tournaments money you got to get back.
So it's big, but I don't know why. What sticks out to me more about this is just the surprise that Louisville, similar to Ole Miss, is just standing by their guy.
And
it just tells me that he knows so much about what's really going on there that they can't afford to get rid of him. That's what I take from it.
I'll see. I think that you were starting to head on the right trail before, which is we're into an era that
NCAA don't have power.
We get you that you're going to have these teeth, but let's be real here. They're forcing everybody to try to say, prove it in writing, prove it in paper, prove it on tape. And if you can't, then they're like, why should we just believe these kids who are testifying and these former prostitutes who are just testifying to you?
Yeah, fair point. All right, let's get the 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
Ray Sevely tweets in, hey, at Cube Show, one big difference between Hugh Freeze and Rick Pitino. How many rings does Hugh Freeze have?
Right now, Rick Pitino is about to lose one, it looks like, so that doesn't help. But also, I would argue that Hugh Freeze has brought in a lot more money to Ole Miss than Rick Pitino is going to bring into Louisville based on sheer scale. And we're also just talking about unprecedented success for this one coach. Should say unprecedented. Ole Miss has had success before. Just say long droughts without having this type of success.
Goodness for you, Arky Shea. USA Today Sports tweets 11 hours ago, Cowboys linebacker Jalen Smith, quote, ready to play some ball after knee injury.
Yeah, we talk some ball, we play some ball. That's what we do in Dallas. I knew Jalen Smith was going to be okay for this year.
CBS Sports NBA.
Boy, I hope that pick turns
more
out to be right.
Maybe good news for you. NBA free agency, Derrick Rose may be willing to take a pay cut to re-sign with the Knicks.
You know, he should do is play on a pro bono phase. Just be like, I'll do this for you for free. But if we win a championship, I'm going to want $25 million.
The comeback, at the comeback tweets 13 hours ago, are you one of the 16 million people who think chocolate milk comes from brown cows?
I am not, but holy smacks.
It's a lot of people
to think that.
Walking around saying, how now, brown cow?
Choco Milko.
What? Brett McMurphy tweets at Brett_McMurphy.
Still on vacation?
Michigan projects $51.1 million in conference revenue from Big Ten for 2018, up from $36.3 million in 2017 due to new TV deal. Well, that's why you get to take a trip to Rome.
Hey, SEC, where's your money at, bro? Try to figure that out. 51 and a... Oh, man, that's a lot of cash.
It's deep pockets. And finally, Ralph DeRusso tweets, the Holiday Bowl will be televised by FS1 on December 28th, the network's first bowl game. Huge.
Hey, listen, we all love bowls, right? Now we get to go to FS1 for a bowl.
There you go. All right, so we'll take a break, come back. Joe Block talks some Major League Baseball right after this. Welcome back in, Cube Show. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9. I'm going to talk some Major League Baseball now. Joe Block, play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates, joins us. Follow him on Twitter, at @Joe_Block. Good morning, Joe. How you doing?
Hey, Cole. Great to hear your voice, man.
I guess pretty cool for you to be in Pittsburgh when the Penguins pick up the Stanley Cup. That had to be something that was fun.
Oh, absolutely. I grew up a Penguins fan, even though I grew up in Detroit. It was hard to get tickets to the Red Wings at that time. So me and my buddy in high school became Penguins fans, and it's not too far of a drive from Pittsburgh to Detroit. So we would go to a couple games in the springtime during spring break and go out and watch them. And so to have been here now for 2 years and watch the Penguins win two Stanley Cups, it's been pretty special.
It's pretty weird. You grow up in one of the mainstay hockey towns on this continent, and you don't even cheer for your hometown team. That's pretty weird.
Well, couldn't get in. They were real popular then, and the Penguins were too. They were winning, the Stanley Cups in the early '90s there. And you and I are both alive during that time, as evidenced by your bumper music. So we became Pens fans at that time. Kind of rode the bandwagon a little bit, and then stuck with them, and have enjoyed this next generation of things. And it was cool that they brought the cup. The Penguins did too. PNC Park, where the Pirates play, the night after, or two nights after that they won it. And so had it in the booth next door, and I took a picture with it, and it was pretty cool.
There you go. Cool stuff. Joe Block, play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right, good news, bad news for the Bucks this year so far. 6 games below .500, yet only 5 games out of first. The Brewers, a team that you've previously called games for, 36-32 on the year. Cubs struggling a little bit as well as the Cardinals. So there is time to sort of get this thing together, right the ship, and compete for a division title. What's holding this team back more than anything else thus far?
I think there's been long periods of underperformance by the team's stars. I think that's what hurt the team last year. Andrew McCutchen now, I think, is legitimately turning this thing around. It's not just a week or two. It's been 3 weeks now of something we haven't seen in the last 2 years, hitting with power to all fields, kind of regaining that swagger, that flair for the dramatic, the clutch moment. All those things that really defined him in his 20s can now keep him very much the same player in his 30s if he can keep up what he's done over the last 3 weeks. So that has helped spur the offense incredibly. This team was among the worst offenses in baseball prior to that stretch. He and the shortstop, Jordy Mercer, have really hit well over the past 3 weeks or so. That's gotten things going that way. Garrett Cole, the team's ace, he had pitched as well as anybody in baseball for the first 2 months of this season. He ran into a stretch of 4 games where he was getting hit very hard. And when your best pitcher is becoming a liability out there, and for 4 games, of course, now, instead of, turning to those 4 games as, likely wins or very good potential wins, they're almost assuredly losses. So he's turned it around in his last start. So if he can get things going back the way he had them already this season, which is very likely because he is one of baseball's better pitchers, then all of a sudden now you're getting the full potential out of your team. And while this team probably on paper wasn't going to compete with the Cubs, they are competing with the Cubs, and in fact, tonight they're going to compete with the Cubs and begin a 3-game series for a team that has had very few games within their own division. They've got a chance.
Visiting with Joe Block, play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and like you mentioned, division series, so that can go a long way with moving up the standings. What kind of surprise has Josh Harrison been for this team? Leads the team in hits and on-base percentage, batting average as well at .305. Is he a guy that most people inside the organization expected this from?
Well, I think, the previous All-Star season that he had, and after signing him to a contract extension, they certainly hoped that. But he'd been bothered with a thumb injury the last couple of years. And, as you know, with hitters, if that thumb's not working, you can't really sting the ball. You can't really put a lot of power into your swing. It's more of a defensive swing. It's a weaker swing. The bat gets knocked out of your hands a little bit more. And so each of the last two seasons for Harrison, who's never going to be a big home run guy, but, I mean, he'd only hit four the previous two seasons and not a lot of extra base hits. Well, with that kind of speed and the way that he plays the game, you'd think that he would pick up a lot of extra base hits, and he didn't. So, sorry, that's my daughter then.
That's all good.
Now that the thumb is healthy, that, you know, he's able to be able to drive the ball so much more, and he's kind of returned to the player that everyone really thinks he can be and is. And so that's helped quite a bit, too, because you got a guy, you know, batting in that two spot, hitting with a little power and hitting 300 and can steal a base and play pretty much anywhere in the field. He's even a good question to be an all-star this year.
Is the rotation deep enough for Pittsburgh to get back into this division, in your opinion?
I think the top three have proven themselves with Cole. Jameson Taillon, who returned from testicular cancer surgery 5 weeks after and just uplifted this team so much and continues to. Right now, all signs continuing to be good for him. And then Ivan Nova, who was acquired in a trade from the Yankees last year, and ever since he's come to the Pirates, he's pitched magnificently. And really those three are guys that any contender at any, you know, point of the season would love to have in their rotation. Now, the other guys are all young guys, either rookies or guys in their first full season that have been rotated in and out. And many have, the two that are in there right now, Chad Kuhl and Trevor Williams, have both shown that they can pitch at the major league level, but they've been inconsistent, which you'd expect from young pitching. So if they can gain consistency and really harness what they've got, then the Pirates are not talking about four, maybe even five starters that are very reliable and deep. But they've definitely got three, and that's actually probably a little bit better than some of the other teams in the division right now.
Joe Block, play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates. What team outside of the Pirates that you have been a part of a call on this year has been most impressive to you?
I'll tell you what, the Arizona Diamondbacks really stand out to me, and I think that's a team that, including myself, I didn't really expect a whole lot from this year. I think last year people did, and it was because, okay, you're going to have a very good starting rotation. That ballpark is conducive to hitting. They've got a good lineup. Wow, that looks like a great combination. Well, there were some injuries and some underperformance last year that, you know, made them an also-ran team. Well, now the injuries have been minimal. Zach Greinke is pitching like, you know, that big contract that they gave him. But they've got some young pitchers, too, that have really started to shine brightly, too. So as those guys have come back into the mix, the Robbie Rays and the Zach Godleys of the world, names that you don't really pay attention to, they've established a good rotation, and they can really hit. I mean, all the way through that lineup is very, very difficult. It's not just Paul Goldschmidt. In that ballpark, they can score a lot of runs, which makes it difficult, but they can prevent them too because of their good bullpen and because of that rotation. So I would keep my eye on Arizona. The Pirates just played Colorado. They look like a solid team, even though the Pirates took two out of three. So that NL West is legit. I think it would be a surprise right now if the two wild cards don't come out of that division.
Joe, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking the time to catch up, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Oh, anytime, Cole. Always like to talk baseball, especially with you, man.
Thanks a lot. Joe Block, at @Joe_Block via Twitter. Can follow him there, play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates. When we come back, we're going to replay Steve O from yesterday because a lot of folks were tweeting in, texting Arky and I. We got some messages on Facebook saying they didn't get to hear it. They wanted to hear it. How could they hear it? Obviously, it's at the podcast. You can go to umsports.com and get that. But
and it happens so late in the show. People don't get to usually hear it. Not everybody hears us at 9:30.
So it was a good interview. It was a fun interview. We'll let you hear that again when we come back next right here on Cube Show. Cube Show, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. Steve O.
Yeah, dude.
Joining us in studio.
I was listening on the way over to your call with Mookie.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
Fascinating.
I
heard you guys talking about how you want to find people who believe that Connor can win against Mayweather.
Do we have one in studio?
Now is it going to be, is it likely that he'll win? Probably not. But I had this conversation with Joe Rogan on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I think Joe Rogan is your believer.
He would be as well-versed in that topic as any of us would. Obviously, knows the MMA and knows the boxing game very well. So.
Right. And Joe Rogan points to McGregor's punching power as the, you know, I guess the
way
shot.
He could do it. Yeah.
Yeah, the way that he could do it. It's just, you know, I mean, when I picture the fight, I picture Mayweather, picture Connor just going after him. Just
right.
going after him and just, you know, I'll take shots. I don't care. I'm just going straight for it and I'm going to hit him with power.
I agree.
And you know, there's only so fast you can run backwards from that.
Yep.
So.
And then on the flip side, will he gas himself out and
correct.
4 or 5 rounds in just be done because nobody's been able to hit Mayweather? We
right.
had a guy on after that, Vegas Runner, who lives in Vegas, and he's saying, listen, all these professional fighters for years and years and years, none of them have been able to touch Floyd, and that's
right.
what they do.
That is what Joe Rogan said as well, that Floyd is the finest defensive boxer perhaps in the history of the sport.
Yep. So our cold question of the day is, presented by Dreamland Barbecue, will you buy it? Are you in?
I've never bought a pay-per-view. I don't even know how you do that. You know, I'll go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, you'll figure out a way to see it. In
I'll
words.
See it.
Yeah,
I'll see
yeah.
it. There's no question. I think that you look at the Floyd Mayweather, the Mayweather Pacquiao fight was the most boring thing. Everybody watched it.
It was bad.
Bad and boring. This. If anything, I think this is more than an event. It's just like it's just a spectacle. It's the fact that there's so much money involved in it is fascinating.
Absolutely.
And it's like a lot of the times we were talking about movies earlier before we got on the air. I think a lot of people go to see a movie just so that they can have their own opinion of why it sucked.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
You want to be able to weigh in yourself on why it was bad. And I think I think these guys are going to make a lot of money so that everybody can have their own informed opinion about why it was a waste of money.
I want to talk a little music with you. Dr. Feelgood, best Motley Crue song ever?
Ooh, I'm partial to Wild Side.
It's a good one, too.
Right. Yeah, I really like Wild Side. I don't know. I think this one woman who danced to it at a strip club in L.A. really
won you over.
Changed my whole attitude about
now,
that.
Now, we brought you back in with the Machine Gun Kelly song.
I love it.
It basically is about you. I mean, it's like, I feel like if you're a white dude that's featured in a rap song, like only you and Ric Flair, I think, are like the two white guys that's happened
Green
to.
Tom Green made it into an Eminem song.
Okay,
that's
good point.
Cool.
And it was kind of circled around him.
Dead moose.
You're right.
Right.
But you made it when that happens. I mean.
I suppose so. I remember.
Were you asked about this song? Or?
Well, now, Machine Gun Kelly recorded that song. Was producing a track with Juicy J from 3-6
yep.
Mafia. And they invited me to come in to be featured in a music video where that one line, you know, they call me Steve-O.
Right.
And that was just one random line in the middle of a song. And then, I don't know, 6 months, a year later, people were like, oh, you got your song, and I didn't understand it. Turns out they pulled that one line from the original song and then made it the hook on a subsequent song. And at that point, I was like, wow. They didn't need my permission, but I was just honored. I was honored. I was grateful. And turns out MGK is just such a class act, man. What a great guy. I'm so happy to see his success.
Pretty cool. It's really cool.
He's really
cool
doing well, and he's doing all this acting, and it's just great, man. He's a good dude.
So he's sort of transitioned over into different things, and you've done the same thing, obviously. It's sort of similar in what you did originally to doing comedy, but there wasn't really the comedic value in how you got noticed compared to what you do now.
Well, I mean, I think that the goal was always to be funny. I think what made Jackass work was our ability to not take ourselves seriously and kind of not look cool for a laugh. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. It's a different deal than doing stand-up or a lot of things. I started out as a circus clown. I've done so many different kinds of things, and it all stems from just the extent to which I'm an attention whore. You know? And I'm so driven to please people and entertain people. And I go to such insane lengths to do that. And I think that's why I've been successful in so many different areas of performance.
Steve Oak joining us in studio. He'll be at Stand Up Live Huntsville tonight through Sunday. There'll be one show Sunday as well.
Correct.
So you're hanging around Huntsville here for
right,
a few days. Do you have any plans? Or
that's the grind.
Like Space and Rocket Center? You can go check that out?
I might, but the likelihood is that I'm going to be really hunkered down on my computer editing footage. I'm getting close to taping my second comedy special.
Nice.
And I have like a whole approach to it. My first one's on Showtime, and I'm really thrilled with how it came out. You can check that out. And now I'm talking with our Jackass director, Jeff Tremaine, about producing my next one. And it's really kind of a multimedia ordeal that we're talking about doing, where there's going to be all kinds of stunts on the stage, and for the various stories I'm telling, archival footage edited in with vignettes of like just big marquee stunts that are plugged in throughout.
Which is intriguing because a lot of things that have gotten really popular recently are sort of the behind the scenes looks of things.
Uh-huh.
So I would assume, and I would be interested in a lot of your stories of saying when you're on the beach and you start throwing jellyfish on your head and your back. How did you think of that? Who thought of that? When did you finally give in and say, I'll do it. If that'll entertain people, let's do it. Like, there would be some great stories behind some of the things that you guys or you have done.
The jellyfish thing, I mean, ideas come in different ways. But the first time the jellyfish idea came up, we were out filming for Jackass. We were swimming with sharks. And that particular day, they had chopped up barracuda fish and strapped them to me, and then I jumped in the water with all this bloody meat strapped to my body while swimming with great hammerhead sharks, and got away with that. But at one point, a jellyfish brushed up against my leg, and I was screaming in pain, like, you know, and got on the boat, and I thought, oh, my God, that hurt. And I want to fill up an aquarium with jellyfish and film the skit. I called it Bobbing for Jellyfish. And we did that, and they were pretty small, and I dunked my face in it all, and then I grabbed one out. I said, this is the jellyfish yarmulke. And I plopped the jellyfish on top of my head. And then years later, I was in Peru and just went out. We're going surfing. And as we went out, the tide had washed in these jellyfish, which were so massive. The whole beach was covered in them. And I thought, oh, my God, that's not a jellyfish yarmulke. That's a jellyfish sombrero.
I think that's the clip they have when they previewed at Stand Up Live. And my wife was actually with me there, and she looked at me and just says, you got to be kidding.
Right.
We have a two-week-old at home. She's disappointed. We're not
going
to be able to go see you this weekend. She really wanted to go. So we're not going to be able to make it. But I appreciate
that. Congratulate people on their kids. I don't know. I'm so grateful that I dodged that bullet.
So speaking of bullets, you brought up pain a little bit earlier. I've had 11 surgeries, so I feel like my pain threshold is pretty high.
Sorry for interrupting, but I don't know that the more pain you endure, that you get any better at enduring pain. Like take being tattooed, for example. The guys who are covered in tattoos, you would think that they were more used to it.
Sure,
they're the biggest wusses. The more you get tattooed, the more it hurts and the more you hate it.
Is there one thing that you have done? That sticks out that hurt worse than anything else?
It's a difficult question to answer because there's sort of different criteria for pain. There's duration of it. There's acuteness of it.
Sure.
You know, there's probably the worst.
Like, I think snorting wasabi would have to be one of the worst.
It wasn't nearly as bad as I would have expected it to be. And I was snorting so much cocaine up my nose at that time that my nose was just not fazed. It was, you know, I was surprised. I thought it would hurt more, and it didn't hurt as much as I expected. Plus, I was caught off guard that it made me vomit, and that was the payoff of the bit that I barfed. But that one really wasn't so bad. I think that over the years, one time I scraped the skin off of one of my butt cheeks in a lackluster, not very impressive shot. But then, and the same thing happened when I burned the skin off of a butt cheek. Like every time I sit down, with the, you know, like my boxers, my underwear would stick to the wound on my butt cheek. And then when I stand up, I got to peel it off.
Boy.
And then it would go on for like a couple weeks. It would be just so annoying. And anything that lasts for 2 weeks.
Yeah, duration, like you mentioned, is obviously something that's a
pain. Duration's a nightmare. But then the sharpness, like on my first comedy special, they shot me with a taser. I mean, not a stun gun, a taser, which shoots the darts with the wires.
Right.
And a police taser will zap you with 50,000 volts for 5 seconds. And at the officer's discretion, he can push the button again and it'll give you another 5 seconds. But a civilian version, which a woman might buy, is totally different. It goes for 30 seconds. And the philosophy is that she can shoot her assailant and then drop the thing, and it gives her 30 seconds to run away.
Yeah.
So there's no way around it. On the civilian model, you're getting 50,000 volts for a sustained 30 seconds. And that was the only one we could get our hands on for my comedy special. I wanted to get tased. And then I was like, oh, my God, 30 seconds is a long time.
Yeah.
And I texted Knoxville. I said, oh, dude, help me get psyched. He says, come on, it'll be hilarious. And that's all I needed to hear. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. But then I started thinking that for on the broadcast, that 30 seconds, it might become boring. You know, that's like just a long time to sit there and watch the same thing happen. So it's like, oh, well, how am I going to make it more interesting? And I was like, oh, a Q&A. So I got my buddy to dress up as a talk show host, came out, and he interviewed me for 30 seconds to see how many questions I could answer in 30 seconds while being tased. And that, like, the sharpness, like the acuteness of 50,000 volts is just – that's high end. And then 30 seconds of it. Like, that's up there, man.
I can imagine.
There's a few things I did on that comedy special that I really believe made television history. You know, beyond like the things I admit, I'm pretty known in my comedy shows to admit things that nobody in their right mind would admit.
Okay.
I'm just as reckless with my comedy as I am with my body. But yeah, that I don't know. I'm excited for this weekend, and it's going to be great.
So if listeners have been a fan of your work previously, and they might be sitting at home thinking, well, I don't want to just go up there and hear him tell jokes. It's going to be more than just that.
It's a variety show. It's a variety show, yeah. And, you know, I care so much about the validation, the approval, the affection. You know, I want to be loved, and there's something just wrong with me. You know, that like we were talking.
I understand.
We were talking about before. There's some kind of to be a comedian or a performer in a lot of ways. I think that you kind of have to have like a built-in self-hatred. It's like, I don't love myself. I need you to do that for me. And I work so hard to please people, to put on a great show. I go to such lengths that I'm just adept at not wasting anybody's time when I get on stage.
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued that you talk about your desire to have people love you and like you.
Right.
You have a pretty big following on social media, which is very well known to be people's favorite place to go hate you. How do you manage that? There has to be a lot. You have over a million followers on Twitter. Number one, how do you even manage that? Number two, because you like to tweet that throughout that you were coming on the show, and I'm thinking, how does he even see that? I can imagine your mentions are just, you can't even funnel through it.
I think Twitter, of any of the platforms, I think that I get it pretty easy on there. Like for the most part, it's pretty rare that I see something that hurts my feelings on Twitter. I mean, I will see it, but it's the comments underneath something that I post,
like
on
a YouTube
other
video, or
oh my God, I can't even look at the YouTube. Like that's the. And I'm a sensitive guy, along with all the other stuff. It's a great question.
Is that how you manage it? Just don't go there? You just don't even?
I really consider something that I post, if it's a YouTube video, if it's a post on Facebook or Instagram, like I almost think of it as I don't want to say a monument, but something that like I put there, like I placed a piece of art, and then the comments is just like a sewer that runs beneath the ground. You know,
it's just poo,
a river of poo flowing beneath an object on the ground.
You can go to huntsville.standuplive.com. Steve O is going to be performing tonight, Friday, Saturday, and a show on Sunday. It's going to be a lot of different things. Very cool. You're going to have fun.
I do a free meet and greet after every show. So, you know, it's every ticket's a backstage pass as well. And I never I never go anywhere. I never do anything until I've taken a photo with everybody
it's
who
great.
Wants one.
It's really cool. And I know a lot of fans, a lot of people who come out to see you really appreciate that.
I think that's how I'm going into my eighth year of being a touring comedian, which is hilarious in and of itself, you know. And it's something I'm proud of because for all the people who have been actors or even wrestlers now, like so many people have kind of become celebrities and then tried stand-up comedy and just fizzled out and it's been a disaster.
It's tough,
and
man.
A lot of people have done that. And the fact that I'm still going is testimony to what I'm saying, that I really care about what I'm doing and I go to great lengths to put on a good show. And I'm just so thankful to be in the position to be able to do this. And I express that gratitude by making sure as many people as possible get a photo, and then in turn they tend to post it on their pages, and then it kind of gets the word out. It's a grassroots way of spreading the word.
Not so much when did you know you wanted to perform, because we mentioned before
the
comedic value has always been there. It's just different now when you're on stage doing it for people. But that part, when did you know that I think I want to get up in front of people and try to entertain them from a comedy standpoint? And when did you fall for it? Because it's pretty obvious you're passionate about it now and you love
time,
it.
Man. Yeah.
When did you fall in love with it?
The first time I ever tried stand-up was 11 years ago when Jackass Number 2 was the promotion machine was revving. It was the summer of 2006. And a guy invited me to a comedy club in Hollywood on the Sunset Strip. He said that he wanted me to get on stage and do a stunt to help promote his show. He wanted to pack the club on a Tuesday or something. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll do that for sure. And I gave no thought to what I was going to do. I'd never been to a comedy club, I don't think. And I walked into the Laugh Factory that night with no game plan at all. And I was, oh, well, what's my stunt? What am I going to do? What's going to be crazy? And I just looked at the stage and I looked around and I thought, there's just no crazier stunt than getting on that stage and trying stand up.
Yeah.
I was just like, it was the most terrifying proposition. And just being a maniac, I was like, I'm going to do that. And I was just scared. And I had, I don't know how long to wait before it was my turn, but some time just sort of sitting there. And I was just thinking, oh, what am I going to say? And I came up with like a few outrageous things, you know, call them jokes. I wasn't on stage, I don't think, for more than 3 minutes. And I just had a favorable experience. I felt people were rooting for me. They were excited to see me.
Yeah.
And I got a few laughs. And before I left that night, I scheduled my return.
That's cool, man. It's really cool. It's weird because, like, it's on a completely different level, but I'll go speak to Auburn clubs or touchdown clubs, and sometimes
sure.
my wife will go with me, and she'll sit with me, and she's like, what are you going to say? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Wow.
She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it'll happen when it happens, and I get up there, or I'll finish, and somebody will say, man, how much time do you put into that? I'm just like, I just go.
Right. I didn't have much of a game plan that first night, but I was only on stage for a few minutes. When I came back, I said I scheduled my return. Before I came back, I really sat down and I wrote down, like, jokes, you know, like I wrote down, like, a thing. And that went reasonably well. And I was like, wow, this is great. I'm good at this. And at that time, 11 years ago, I thought, oh, well, every time I go to the club, I'm going to do something different. I didn't think that, oh, I'm going to work on an act and I'm going to own it. So I became confident that second time. When I came back for the third time, I was like overconfident. I didn't prepare. I got on stage and I just bombed. I bombed. And then I bombed again another time after that. And then I was scared to return. And it wasn't until 2010 that I really dove in.
Really cool stuff. Steve-O will be at Stand Up Live Huntsville all weekend, starting tonight. He'll be there Sunday as well. Huntsville.standuplive.com. You can head over to the box office to pick up tickets. Hey, well, really appreciate your time.
Hey, man,
thanks for coming in. Really cool interview.
Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to you guys on the way over, too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Back with more Cube Show next.